A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Match Ball.
Hello there, and welcome to the show. This is The Match Ball, brought to you in partnership with Levi's Solicitors. Michael, say some things about Levi's Solicitors, please. Three big things, if you could.
Do you know them? You're new to this.
I'm new to this, so fill me in.
Wills, probate, yeah. Conveyancing.
I love that.
That's never sounded sweeter.
Thank you so much. That was like going to a gig and hearing your favourite songs. So I appreciate
thing,
it. Thank
play
you
so the much. Hits. Play the hits.
Right. So if you go to www.levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball, you'll get 10% discount on all your legal fees. Now, elephant in the room, I'm not Dan Moylan. He, it says here, is on holiday with his family. Pathetic. Missing out on that.
His alleged family.
His alleged family. My name is Dean Smith. Not that one. Different one. I don't know John Terry. I've only got one haircut. But we're going to get straight into the show. I'm here with Michael and Daniel Chapman, Moscowite. Moscow, I'll come straight to you. What's just happened, mate?
Well, I mean, you've come straight to me just after I've said, I can't remember much of what just happened. The last half an hour felt like it was just merged, didn't it? Did you just merge into one thing in your brains?
I don't think there's two distinct bits. There's the bit where I thought we were dropping points and then the bit where Somerville rolls the ball into the net and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and in between them, there was an argument, wasn't there? You like
yes.
The argument?
The argument, so for anyone not who hasn't seen this or anyone not in the stadium, Junior Firpo is stood with the ball in his hands for the penalty, right? On 88
minutes. Should have just taken it.
Should have just taken it, or would that have given everyone cardiac arrest? Would that have tipped everyone over the edge?
Well, I think what happened anyway didn't prevent any cardiac arrests.
Yeah.
He should have just cut through.
Was it a little bit of gamesmanship, an extra level of gamesmanship? Was Somerville always going to take it, or was Pirou generally put out by that?
I think he was genuinely put out.
You're nearer. I was at the far end. What did you see?
It looked a lot like Pirou was quite annoyed. And then Ampadu had to come over. I don't know if Ampadu knows maybe what Somerville is like. And he's like, if I tell him not to take this, he's not going to give the ball anyway. Whereas if I tell Joel it's fine, he'll just meekly go away.
Yeah.
But he was definitely stood there being like, what the fuck are you doing? The penalty taker.
He did go to celebrate.
You were good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing. I was, my dad sat out there. Hi, Dad. It was, me and him were sat there today. And the first thing he said after the goal ball went in the back of the net, Pirou went over to celebrate. But it shouldn't happen, should it? I don't think that level of it's my penalty, it's your penalty thing should be happening at this level. But should we listen, it was a good day. So let's go back to the start. Starting lineup, how did we feel when that came out? This felt like the most obvious lineup that we could have had today based on what happened on Friday. What were your thoughts, Michael, when we saw that come in?
Yeah, I was pleased with it. And then I saw it on the pitch. I didn't like it too much because it felt like they had a fair grip of the midfield. But yeah, I was pleased that Ampadu and Rose on. I mean, and to be fair to them, they were good again, I thought, at centre back. Mm-hmm. Hull had a lot of the ball, but it was mainly in front of them, wasn't it? But they didn't have many chances, did they, in that game?
No. I think Ampadu and Rodon back together was important defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was... I kind of made a pre-match note about Archie Gray kind of graduating into midfield and like grasping the future the way Gary Speed did in the last stages of promotion 89-90. And then, about half-time, I was going... I wish Ilya Groove was playing. And maybe, I don't know. I don't know how I felt about Byram tonight. He was a bit of everything.
Mm.
But that part of it. And then what I didn't enjoy about Ampadu in particular was he kept trying to just go past Gray and Kamara with that long ball, that long low pass, the daisy cutter through the centre circle. that neither Rutter or Dan James, I don't know if you bother trying to hit Bamford, ever seem to get near to, and then they'll all be like, they're like, well, this isn't going great. But we, you know, it was, if there's no Gruev, then it's about the best we could do. And they all looked pretty tired by the end. I think the international break didn't do us a lot of favours.
No, definitely so.
Important question for you, actually. I can see in the comments that we're not clicking them on screen because Dan does that
and then doesn't listen.
Yeah, and then doesn't listen to us.
Dean is paying attention.
Someone asked, what time did your dad leave? Dan's dad
normally leaves very, very early. My dad stayed.
Right? Okay,
he's a tight Yorkshireman. He's going to get his money's worth.
Good stuff.
So yeah, he stayed. Let's go back to the ninth minute, the glory of the ninth minute. Mm. I have it on good authority. Dan Moylan, if you remember that name, he texts me saying that Byram stuck it in with his retinas. Have we seen this back? Did you have a little telly today, Moscow?
No little telly. No. A little telly.
How come they're taking
it off you? They haven't. I've gone on the gantry for a more chilled out time.
Okay.
And a better view.
I wasn't sure about the goal because they seem to all be looking across at the linesman, and I was thinking, oh, is this offside or something? And I think, was it not, didn't hit the net, did it? I think it was cleared from behind the line or something, because it looked like Byron was looking across and still a little bit worried and waiting for it to be confirmed.
The referee gave a big gesture towards his watch and then pointed to the thing. So I think he'd given it on the basis of that. But can you remember the run-up to the goal? Jorginho Rutter.
Yeah, what hernia.
Mm-hmm. Don't need it.
No, he actually, in the first half hour, because we kind of let Hull have the ball after we'd scored, but maybe the first 20 minutes, he was brilliant for that goal. Already before then, he'd gone back and he'd bailed Sam Byram out, tackled somebody, and then kept the ball as he beat about seven players without actually getting any further up the pitch, which was very exciting. Mm-hmm. And then there was one point, I don't know if it was first half, second half, he did a really good, it was exactly on half an hour, he got back and made a big tackle around the area where we needed one to stop their equaliser, like the best central defensive midfielder we could hope for. So I started playing fantasy games with Jorginho in my mind, where I was like, well, if Archie's not quite doing it, can we stick him at four and he can be Kamara's partner, or actually just put him in defence and then like Ampadu can go back into midfield? I think as a centre-back, he'd be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, do you?
And yes. I'm okay. Standing by it.
And these are very different fantasy games with Rutter than Dan Moylan plays. So I'm glad to hear that.
Don't want to know anything about that thing. But then... because he played it on to, who did he give the ball to for
Somerville.
The goal?
Somerville.
And then he had a shot, didn't he?
Yeah.
The old shot was saved.
And it looked from where I was in the east, it looked like it had gone out for a corner, so I kind of reset, we go again, Leeds, and then all of a sudden it's in off his face. Very, very good. He must have made up some ground, Byram, for to be able to steam it at the back stick like that.
I think he was very tired at the end, wasn't he? I think he just before he was substituted, he basically just, did he kick a ball straight out or just to no one?
Yeah.
And it was just the most tired looking thing you've ever seen. And I think Farke was like, yeah, he's done enough. Because he's played midweek as well, didn't he? Not midweek, whatever the fuck this is. Right. A couple of days ago.
Friday.
You're not a church going Christian, are you?
So then 23 minutes on the clock, we venture forward again. The ball heads over to Sir Patrick of Bamford. What happened there? I've seen it back and I still can't quite believe it. Does he believe that the defender in front of him is going to get a little touch, so he tries to move his body? Because that miss was something else. It was right out of the greatest hit.
Does the defender get touch?
I've not seen it back.
A little.
All
he
I've
needs
seen
like a snickometer
is that donkey miss.
He should just score. Looks really, really straightforward.
He should. He opens his body up and everything looks good, but it looks like he just for a second takes his eye off the ball and then over it goes. And it's a souvenir for a lucky fan. But was that the moment where we started to lose a grip on the game? Because it felt like up until that moment, we were not playing to our, you know, champagne vintage self, but we were knocking it around in a decent way. I actually thought Hull were pretty good today, I got to tell you. I think they used the space well. They tactically used the man-to-man system that we saw Watford use on Friday as well. But yeah, was that the point? Did our heads just dip slightly from there? What do we think?
It felt... just like, I don't know, it felt like their goal had been coming. It felt like they were in it.
Yeah.
But then it was weird because it seems to me like we set up almost like an away game in that we were prepared to let them have the ball for quite a bit of it and sucker them in a bit and then take our chances. Because we did have the better chances. There's no denying it. For all they had more possession and a fair bit of stress was caused, it's not like they were creating chance after chance, were they? There was a header that kind of hit, I think it hit the post behind the goal, which looked, I think probably looked closer than it was. There was a shot, a long shot. There were a couple where it was bouncing around, but they didn't actually carve us open apart from the goal, did they?
No, we have a habit sometimes that when we go ahead, the next 10 minutes, the other team just has the ball. And I noticed Farker, you know, Farker sometimes will do his kind of, he'll put his hands up like everybody can be calm for a while, calm. He was standing on the touchline, and I don't know if it's because he wasn't feeling calm enough. He kind of had his hands like this, like a cat. He's kind of standing there just for a while. Like, and I don't know if that was a different thing, if he's a little bit more nervous. He couldn't quite get to the calmness of outside. He was just like there with his little paws curled up.
Tigers. But
we, yeah, maybe that's it. Get the ball off the Tigers. And we do that sometimes. And I think between, I think who scored, you can work out the bits of, you can like do a period of possession. I think between us scoring and then Bamford doing what he did, would my guess 90% Hull possession, but not doing anything with it. So it felt fine. But the problem is, and I felt this when it's happened earlier in the season, we get into that mode and then the other team are just like, oh, they're just going to let us have the ball. Well, we may as well try to score now. And then we never quite got the ball back in that half, I didn't think.
Yeah. I've met a mate of mine text me at halftime saying that we'd only had 33% possession in the first half. And that feels like at Elland Road, that is very low for this season. Yeah. Very low. But like Michael was saying there, it didn't feel like they were doing too much with it, especially coming forward. But how did they have so much room in the midfield versus how much time we felt like we had in the midfield? Kamara in the first half was poor, I think. Gray just didn't have any, was very ineffectual. So how did they have so much space? Could we see that from where we were, Gantry boy?
He's asking football questions, Michael.
More midfielders,
yeah,
is my guess.
I think that's it.
And they had more midfielders.
The goal, it was pretty clear from the players' reaction. They were all kind of crowding around Glenn Kamara, falling short of like shoving him around and putting him on the floor. But how they did that, don't know. They did some football stuff.
There was a bit, speaking of Kamara, I made a note about him, 53 minutes, where a whole stadium shouted, turn. You don't get that very often. You get man on, is like a common one, or shoot. Mm. But he got in midfield, everyone went, turn! And it was really audible in the stadium. Interesting.
Yeah, we've had the question all season of like, could Archie Gray join Kamara in midfield? And maybe that's the way that we solve things. And I think this is maybe we saw a bit tonight of why he's been playing right back.
Yeah.
Like a good place for a 17-year-old just turned 18 to be when the player who'll be playing alongside is not able to kind of shoulder the responsibility. I know it's right at the end when we had a free kick in stoppage time right in front of Melier. Ampadu had it. And he was telling Gray, he was like, Archie, come here a little bit closer. Mm-hmm. So even at that point, they're still just trying to tell Archie where to stand as a midfielder. And I think, so him being new to all of that, and it gave Hull somewhere to target. And then Glenn Kamara all season has been a little bit, I don't think anybody at any point has thought, he's played pretty much all the games, but it's always been Ampadu's been the one playing great alongside him, or the Gruffalo has been the one playing great alongside him, and it's kind of Kamara's there to be tidy. He's had a couple of games where he's been really good, but not he's not been the season defining player. So maybe it is just the Gruffalo. I mean, we weren't
we missed him today.
We can't, we can't pin it all on Kamara, but I think we can because him and Ampadu together at Watford wasn't working very well.
Yep.
It maybe is that just we need Gruev more than we ever realised we would.
Yeah. And it's in a season full of redemption arcs, as Dan likes to call it. He's having played very, very little across the first part of the season. Mm. When we need him now, we need him. We need him back.
Where is he?
Is he a couple of weeks away?
Well, they thought he might play tonight.
Mm. Oh, really?
I hope he's, let's see if Farker's saying, oh, right, okay. So as soon as we say all that, I just see a tweet immediately. Glenn Kamara played through illness. Sorry, Glenn. You did your best.
Bless your soul, Glenn.
I take it all back. Joe Roden, my God, we really are. So Glenn Kamara played through illness. Joe Roden played on painkillers due to back spasms. And Sam Byram told Daniel Farker at halftime that he couldn't sprint anymore.
Good grief. Well, that makes a bit of sense now, having watched that first, especially the
What's
first
his excuse in the first half?
And I like it how Farke heard that from Byron, looked at Jamie Shackleton and went,
yeah.
No, you stay. No.
We stay.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah, it felt like to me that around about 65 minutes, we seemed to get hold of the ball a little bit more. There started to be a little bit more urgency. And it desperately needed it. The start of that second half just felt like we're just waiting for them to put Billy Sharp on and score a fucking goal.
It feels always a bit like in the second half when we're not winning, like you're just waiting for 70 minutes, yeah. So we'll make some substitutions, because he never does it before then, yeah. Does he? And it was like, when we eventually took, because Bamford looked knackered as well. Mm-hmm. Like from quite early on, they looked really, really sluggish, I thought. Not just on that finish, but I don't know. And then Josie came on and instantly started just roughing people up in that way that he likes to do. Missed a chance, didn't he? But which I've not seen back yet. I don't know if he should have scored it or not, but I don't know. I like the way he comes on, and as a teenager just starts trying to beat people up. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like a young Alan Smith, how he used to come on the pitch and just try to upset people.
To nip back slightly, the shot just on the stroke at halftime. Did that hit Bamford? Was it going in?
No, I was behind it. It looks like very much it's going wide, but it does strike him.
Okay. And then just, we'll get all the Bamford slander out in one go. At the start of the second half, there was a cross that was right in front of him.
Yeah.
Should he have scored that? Was that a header that should have gone in?
It looked again from where I was in the East that the keeper got a touch on it.
Okay. That would have put him off.
He certainly turned around and remonstrated thus to the referee. But the referee didn't give anything, so whether or not it had just flashed past him. But he looked off it today. But I think with that list of injuries and illness, I think that is evident on the pitch there.
Yeah.
So all in all, I mean, like, we still got a lot to talk about, but that's a very, very good result. Like, to have played as badly as we did for the first hour and a bit, and to be sat here with the score at 3-1. We've not even mentioned the score yet. It was 3-1 to Leeds United.
It was, yeah.
When we were in the tunnel pre-game, what score did I say? Can you remember?
I'm going to say 3-1.
Yeah, baby. They call me Nostradamus. I was like, yeah, 3-1. I felt it in my blood and guts. So let's go to Somerville's penalty. There was a couple before then, penalty shouts. The one on Archie Gray, pardon me. Did anyone have a better view of that than me? Because that looked...
I had a good view of it. I didn't think it was.
No?
No.
Took a bit of a spill, though. He was all over the place.
I didn't think that was a penalty.
I
think he may have been caught, but I think it was one of those maybe where there's a bit of ball and foot or something.
Have you ever known an 18-year-old to lie?
this feels like a really... Could go in many different directions.
Answer carefully. levisolicitors.co.uk/squareball.
Yes. I thought loads of lies when I was 18. You do, don't you? You're trying to bullshit you out or something.
That's it. I hadn't thought the implications of that question through in the direction that you ended up taking. and then there was the Dan James one.
Yes, yeah.
The Dan James one, he booted him. I'm pretty sure the ball, he got the ball and then Dan James tripped over in kicking him after the ball had gone.
Well, they gave a free kick against Calvin Phillips for that penalty.
My favourite part of that was Dan James had just booted him in the leg, and one of his, I don't know which pole player was down or indeed tried to help, but someone came over and started trying to like stretch out cramp, and the guy goes, "I've been kicked in the fucking leg. What are you doing?" That doesn't fix everything. Just obviously, he's like, "I've seen people do this. If someone's injured, he comes over and starts trying to bend his foot back." So that was good, but it didn't work.
Straight out of the Michael Normanton medical book.
He's like, "It's that. There's like a sponge, one of the things, some spray,
magic spray.
Yeah,
Tiger balm, spray for the eyes for Sam Byron when the ball went in off him
off the retina." And so, yeah, around about 80 minutes, did we see this coming? Did we see the 3-1 happening? I did not.
Not 3-1.
I was ready to welcome, like I said before, Billy Sharp onto the pitch to throw one in off his arse.
We'd had a little bit of improvement, and it was annoying improvement at first, because you're absolutely right. 60 minutes, I wanted it changed. I was willing Farker to not wait for just once in his life, do it 10 minutes earlier and see what happens. But then we started giving the ball to Somerville almost exactly on the hour. Obviously that made us loads better. And I feel a bit sorry sometimes for Dan James over on the other side, because he's really good. But there is kind of a big, like everybody, any chance to get giving it to Somerville. And then, but it makes perfect sense. So there was about 10 minutes of Somerville almost doing stuff. There was the one Rutter sort of put him through, and then he crashed into the whole player, and it was a free kick against him.
Yeah,
which seemed unfair.
Yeah, that was bizarre. That seemed like a 10-minute period where the dickhead ref thought, "I've not been as much of a dickhead as I should be," and just started making bizarre calls, that being the best one of them.
And then Joseph came on, and some of the free kicks against him seemed a little bit
yeah.
He did seem to break Coyle's back with one of the tackles, because he did leave the pitch barely able to walk.
But that was after free kicks have been given against him for nothing. So I think he just thought, I may as well just pick on the most whole person here.
Fair enough.
And I hope he didn't break his back.
That could have been Dan James, actually, the most whole person there. But
yeah, well, that's something to come to as well.
was he playing centre-back, by the way? Was
Dan James?
No, Louis Coyle.
Oh, it was hard. I mean, I knew... Somehow I had a feeling I'd get asked about Hulk's formation. I don't know.
Yeah, he was playing right back, wasn't he?
Not used to football.
He was tucked
stuff.
In a lot. Mm. He was always in that like right centre back spot.
Sulphur score. Yeah, the eye test, this conforms to what I thought. It's like a classic 4-4-2, but Louis Coyle is at right back, so that when they tended to put Regan Slater, who I'm sure was in EastEnders, would like go down the right, and it's becoming, and then Coyle shuffles over, and it becomes like a 3-5-2.
It says they're two up front on that.
Yeah.
Because it was Carvalho was kind of at the tip of it, but he's not generally an out and out striker, is he? He's not normally more of a, he was a bit, is it a false nine, I'm going to say?
I think it's a 4-4-2 with some faffing about, isn't it? That's basically the theory here.
And did it work?
No.
No, it didn't.
No,
pathetic.
But Louis Coyle's a bit of a... He's just an enigma. I kind of like Louis Coyle. Nobody else would ever be as committed to Hull as he was. And he was all right for us. He was fun. He could have been a good player for us, but he's decided to just completely devote his entire existence to Hull. He's got like... he's the captain. Hasn't he got a... He's got businesses in the city, foundations. His whole family are on the payroll with him, doing loads of good works.
And
fair
why
enough.
Not? And why not? Someone's going to do it. Someone's got to be there in Hull doing the Lord's work. Now, listen, the penalty. It was a penalty. We think that was...
Yeah.
It looked like he got wiped out.
He completely knew what he was doing, did Somerville.
Yeah.
Yeah, drew the foul.
Yeah. He knew exactly what had happened when that klutz...
Who was the klutz?
Dangled his leg at him.
I have a feeling it was Regan Slater. I think it might be written down somewhere, but I can't find it. he beat number 27... Regan Slater. Yes.
We did it.
And it was great. Simple football. Give it to your really good winger.
Yeah.
Let him run around the outside of a slow fullback, and then get into the box, and you either score or win a penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. When in the East, everyone kind of cheers and settles down, and then everyone looked up and saw Junior Firpo with the ball in his hand, and the air went out of everything. I could see Piru loitering in the just outside the D. What is Somerville doing though, going over and taking that fucking ball? You'd think for how many of the squad, Piru, we all know Piru, Farke came out and said it in an interview, Piru is the spot kick taker. What's he doing? He's put so much pressure on himself though.
He
won it, score.
Didn't he? The thing is with Somerville, he's often comes across as a bit of a knobhead in like doing stuff he's not meant to do. Like when Jesse said he not to go to Holland, and then he was like, yeah,
fuck off.
I'm gonna go to Holland. You can fuck off. And like, you're not the penalty taker. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna, but I won it. So it's kind of those rules don't really actually count if you win the penalty, Daniel. So
I have a feeling Farke has said something about confidence that kind of gives them license. He's like, the pecking order is that these players, if they start, they can take a penalty. And it's Piru, Somerville and Strauch are like the ones who, if they're there, right, if they all started the game, they can take a pen. He doesn't like players coming off the bench and taking a penalty.
Right.
So I think that gives Somerville a little bit of a bragging rights. Mm. And then he has also, because this isn't the first time when players have kind of looked as if they're taking the ball off each other. And I think Somerville might have done it when he missed. That might be wrong, but I'm sure this has come up before. And Farke has kind of said, if there is a player who is just like, he's got the confidence to take it, I don't have a problem with them taking it. I think the thing with Somerville is that he could be having a full Bamford of a night and he would still be like, no, it is my destiny to take this penalty and score. And then I think that kind of comes through in the celebration as well, where the shirt is off and the shirt is in the air and it's all like, this was written.
Mm.
This was meant to be, Joel, you are just you're a bit part in somebody else's dream at this point.
But don't you think that conversation should happen before the handover? So if Firpo's got the ball in his hand, should Somerville not go over to Piru and say, yeah, I got this one?
Mm. He did come from nowhere, didn't he? It looked like Piru was about to kick it. And then he was like, nah, go on, out of the way.
That's why I thought there was maybe a little bit more gamesmanship going on with the keeper. But it's one of those awkward ones
though, because you go, well, he did score it. And in an alternate version, maybe Piru puts it over. And then everyone's like, oh, fucking hell, is it?
I think my favourite bit was when Firpo went back to get involved again and he was like, no, it's all right, we'll sort this out.
You don't need to do it.
Let's not get drastic.
We haven't even talked about Firpo's chance, have we? His header. I think he should have maybe done better with that. It was a bit of a fairly free header when it was crossed in from the right.
In the second half, just after Joseph hit the post?
Yes.
Yes.
At that point, I was thinking, we're doing this now. It's not happening.
But that's the point in the game where it seemed like we were at least having chances and shots, and I think then after the goal, after 2-1, it was always just going to be a case of sitting back. When the keeper went up for the initial corner, why did he stay there? So the ball, I was stood there with my dad, and the ball gets recycled, and the keeper stays up.
I
like it now because we've got a goal, but it seems like a really bizarre thing. Is it just they just really wanted to find that equaliser?
The worst bit of that end section, whatever you're going to call it, is when Ruta had it.
Yep.
And he could have just cleared it.
It really hurt.
And he just, for some reason, somehow he had the ball and then they had the ball and they were passing it back into the box. And he's just like, why?
Yeah.
That's why the keeper stayed up. He's like, these silly bastards, I'm not going to just kick it clear. Joseph did one incredible clearance at one point where he just hoofed it away. But yeah, everybody else seemed to be, let's try and create an opportunity.
Yeah. So that's doing fucking pirouettes.
Kick it.
Bizarre. But let's talk about that Dan James finish. He made that look a lot easier than it is.
I was...
Unbelievable goal.
I knew the keeper wasn't there, but I was still thinking, just run into the corner. Just don't give him a chance to even take a goal kick. Just run into the corner and just hold it there and win something.
What was the game? Was it last season? Was it maybe even this season, earlier this season? Or the season before? There's a big window.
Yeah.
It was a Leeds
season. Everybody, a game that Leeds played we were on the break from a very similar situation and about to score and the referee blew the whistle. I think we'd won anyway.
I vaguely remember this,
And he just took all the fun out of us scoring another goal. So I feel like I've been waiting for this since I don't know how long because I can't remember when it happened.
And I think I'm fairly confident that is the furthest out Leeds goal I've ever seen.
Archie Gray in the under-21s.
Not a Leeds game. You can't count youth football. Okay. I mean, someone in the under
against Man United
under 14s may have.
That was closer, was it not?
I think it was close.
Maybe.
Because it was... Cause
and
it
apparently, right not on
the,
for Leeds.
Oh, no, but you can't go... Because how far are you going to go back? You're going to start going through the...
Joffe scored it for the under-21s as well from basically halfway against Liverpool.
Against Liverpool, if under-21s
don't count, yeah, maybe.
Rodrigo's against Scum where he didn't mean to shoot. That was from fairly far out, but it wasn't that far, I don't think.
That was from the same part of the pitch where he swung a leg and it gave it to an Arsenal player and then they scored. But it's just a very different outcome.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, we're getting into Gary McSheffrey from the left wing territory, but the beauty
Warnock's
with
free kick as well that went in.
Stephen Warnock, yeah, just to be clear for anybody confused, any people who've joined us late in the decade, that it was nice though because the whole night had been punctuated with Hull City fans trying to they were giving it all. You let your country down, at Dan James, and then what was the one about him leaving Hull? That's when the penny clicked. I was like, why are they having such a go at little Dan James?
Because he'd started there before he went to Swansea.
Yeah, and the song was...
they were singing You Let Your Country Down.
And then the other one.
I didn't hear the other one.
It was like, you're too shit to play for Hull or some kind of standard stuff. Okay. And then I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
That's, I can see people in the comments rightly pointing out that it was Rudy Austin 10 years ago in the cup. So I don't know if you've got...
What, who had the whistle blown? No. It happened much more recently than this.
Okay, maybe it's happened since as well.
It has happened since.
But I tell you what's not happened for a long, long time is that we've won on Easter Monday. Mm. Is the jinx over? Are we going up as fucking champions, boys?
Well, I mean, Ipswich.
What did Ipswich do? Were you aware of this as it was happening?
Yeah, I make this mistake. It should be a pleasure. I like listening to football commentary on the radio. So as I was walking to Elland Road several times this season, I've had the Ipswich game on.
Oh, man.
And it feels like, yeah, just a great part of this season has been, just a 97th minute. Leif Davis has got the ball. Oh, it's a scramble in the air. Ipswich have won. And I'm just at the point now where if they want to win the league, fine. Like, I respect, they're doing incredible things, ridiculous things. I've said at the start of the season, they surely cannot keep winning every game 3-2 and 4-3. And what are they doing? They're winning every game 3-2 and 4-3. They just don't stop. 97th minute winners all over the place. And I think I've got a theory now that if they get promoted this season, as I hope they will, hopefully behind us, because it'll be really funny about Leicester. They'll qualify for Europe next year. This isn't stopping. They're just going to keep going. It's been 2 years nearly of people going, I wish Ipswich would just fucking quit. We should just stop this. Yeah. And they won't. They'll just keep doing it.
Last year they came up with Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday and they both stopped winning, like sensible adults. But, you know, they just keep going, don't they? There's going to be games where other teams drop points. Yeah. There will. I know it's technically not in our hands anymore, is it?
There's plenty of points to play for. It's that time of the season as well. When I got there today, East End Concourse was full of people watching the TVs down there. And then I didn't know that Ipswich had scored a winner until I saw everybody streaming back to the seats. And I was like, something's gone on here. Check my phone. And there we go, 97th minute.
I was taking that in from selling the magazines. New magazine up, by the way. Should buy that. There you go, Moscow's holding one.
It's got
Archie Gray,
our lousy midfielder on them.
Right back.
He ain't no Gruffalo. We'll do some stickers with Ilya Gru's face, and it'll be fine.
But nice. Yeah, from selling the mag there, I could hear lots of sighs and yelling and stuff going on from inside the stadium. Obviously, never quite know what a shout is, dear. So I was on my phone trying to refresh it, and it was inevitable.
I think on the one hand, I don't mind Ipswich doing this. It's completely they're playing a different kind of sport to everybody else. They're just doing their own madness. Leicester's win is a bit more annoying because I don't think they deserved it.
Right.
They went behind to, it was being described on the commentary as an Andy Hughes architect, was the architect of this set piece move from a corner. He's copied the Man City goal against Liverpool the other week. Was it against Liverpool? No, it was against Arsenal, wasn't it? Where they just fired it to the near post, moved the defender out of the way and scored. The beauty of that is that they scored the goal that Manchester City scored and everybody said, that's great, against Enzo Maresca, who clearly wishes he was back at Manchester City where none of this PSR, these charges can't touch him if he was still there. But yeah, Andy Hughes was getting all the congratulations from Wagner for that. And then the Leicester fans, the ball went to their good winger and they were all doing ironic cheering as if like, oh, finally, we're giving it to a good player. And then they equalised from that move. And I felt like it should have been ruled out for too much irony.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of as we were at the start of the day, isn't it? With us, Ipswich, and Leicester winning. Southampton are a finished club.
They're probably out too far back now, aren't they?
Two games in hand, though.
Yeah, but even if they win the two games in hand, they're still 6 points behind, aren't they?
We need them to disrupt Leicester in one of those games, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's one of the games in hand, yeah.
But hopefully by the final day of the season, then resting players for the playoffs.
Yeah.
So
it's probably two out of us, Ipswich and Leicester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The points deduction. Do we start crossing our fingers next season?
That'll be next season.
It will be next season, unfortunately.
How did you feel like the crowd were tonight? How did we feel like the atmosphere was in there?
It's very tense. It's very tense. It was a nice, should mention the Chris and Kev tribute, actually, that was good. And also credit to Ethan Ampadu, who seemed to tell the ref to stop play at that point. He seemed to be like, look, there's a thing going on.
Yeah. Did Melier just, as well was just
hold the ball. It was quite nice that they were able to hold the play while that was going on.
Yeah. I think Melier just had the ball and just stopped doing anything and the referee was about to march over, but all sorted out and all was very nice. But yeah, apart from that, as tense as you'd as anybody would expect, really, probably if you were watching at home, you were probably equally, although I suppose soft furnishings and maybe a pet could have helped some people.
Yes. Has anyone got eyes on what Farke said? Has anything come through?
Only that
your Twitter sphere.
Everyone's very, very poorly.
Yeah, he's really apart from the injury list. Anything about the game?
He's really into torturing Sam Byram. Is that all he's? He just won't leave that subject alone.
He sent him out for a run.
You got to have hobbies. I don't mind it.
Something about the penalty. I can find that. I've just got to get through the indefatigable headlines on the YEP. He's revealed some unseen complications. I don't know how, if they're unseen, how they've been revealed, but we won't worry about this. He says, I think there's no doubt it was a well-deserved win. We had six times the amount of expected goals they had, but it was complicated due to many reasons. Third day, Glenn Kamara played more or less ill. Chris Somerville had some problems. We had a short morning session. Joe Roden played with painkillers. He had some back spasms. Sam Byram told me at halftime he couldn't sprint anymore. Thank God Jamie Shackleton is back, but he's more or less without game rhythm. And I wanted to have Sam with his maturity and strength and set. So actually he is. He's just talking about torturing Sam Byram. Hull never lose because they have good footballers. They set traps. And it's a really good side. We didn't want to go into this trap, so we allowed them a bit more possession. 67% by Dean's count. I think that's a little bit more than a bit more possession. You can lose nerves, but we stayed mentally strong. The penalty. Let's get into the penalty. Cree was our taker on the team sheet.
Right.
So today we didn't have many natural-born takers on the pitch, and our second taker, thank God he didn't have to. I don't know who that must have been, but normally when I substitute Joel in, he's the first man, but I don't like you to take a penalty when you're on for 30 seconds. You need to have a few touches. There was some confusion. It was definitely the right decision for Cree to take it. And thank God he scored. It must have been, because we'd only taken Bamford off at that point, hadn't we?
No, Piru had come on for Kamara as well.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, Glenn Kamara's not taking a penalty. No. So he's like, thank God our second taker didn't have to. He must mean if some of them have been injured, or maybe he's just like, he's as sick of Bamford trying to take penalties as everybody else.
And listen, all's well that ends well because it hit the back of the net, and that's what counts at this time of the season. Right, we'll sign off there. We're going to look ahead across the week in propaganda on Wednesday, and then we'll be back here for the weekly show, and then I'll be here with Phil as well towards the end of the week. We're galloping towards the end of the season. We've got Coventry away on Saturday. But I think we can officially say that was stressful, and I'm glad it's over. Thank you very much. We'll speak to you soon. Goodbye. The Match Ball.
Hold up. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.